Joy Still. David Happ.
Here.
Cheryl Hanley Maxwell.
Here.
Mike Smith. Deb Roush.
Here.
Item number three, I'd like to make a motion to approve the agenda as presented. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The agenda is approved as presented. Do we have any citizen input or public participation today? Okay, moving on. As for comments today, since we have applications to request to review, I don't have too much to say. I just want to acknowledge, though, that there's a lot happening in the legislature, and maybe Dale knows more about that, and Lynn. A number of Senate bills and House bills, including a bill to raise wages for DSPs, and some group home bills, and if you are interested in any of these issues, I would encourage you to file witness slips if it's still possible to do so. I think there was a deadline of this Friday, right?
It just depends on what
you... For action in both the House and the Senate. Okay.
Can you talk about the process?
Sure, if you'd like. Well, let's approve our board minutes, maybe, huh? Are presented on pages 3 to 5.
No approval.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved as presented. Financial information is presented on pages 6 to 7. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor? Any discussion? All in favor of approving?
Aye.
Opposed? Financial information is, the claims report is approved as presented. Okay. Item 8 is new business. I'm assuming we're probably not going to have much discussion today outside of what we our main business today, but is there any discussion on any issues by any for any board members today? Okay, moving on to item B, agency requests for IDD funding. Beginning on page 8 through page 110 are our requests for this year. We have a 3 out of 5 board members here today. And we'd like for all 5 board members to have the opportunity to pose questions about each one of these requests. And there are always, in addition to that, questions that come out of questions. So we are going to allow for written questions to be presented from board members. And what is the deadline, Lynn? Did you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, we were thinking that if we have all the board questions sometime tomorrow, then we can turn them around on Friday so that agencies can have a week to respond to any other questions, to respond in writing so that we can share their answers and the questions in the next board packet or even possibly email them out before that if everything is together. So that's a short turnaround time for the agencies, but they're already responding to the program summaries by 4:30 next Friday, so we'll just tack it onto that.
Okay, so probably the best way to go is to just go request by request and see what questions there are. Is that what we typically do, right? So starting with on page 11, and I do want to make a note, too, that the CLC plans, which actually start on page 8, on page 9. There's a CLC plan presented in at the very beginning of each request. And then the actual request summary, program summary, follows that for each particular request. On page 11, are there any questions for the CCRPC regarding the community services application? The program is the Decision Support Person-Centered Planning request. It's my understanding that the increase in this request this year is to implement conflict-free case management planning and using the DHS tools developed for individuals with Medicaid. And in this instance, it would be used for individuals without Medicaid who are on the emergency list, the emergency funds list of the critical.
Not with Medicaid, but Medicaid waiver funding. So people who don't have state awards yet.
Right. No comments, no questions. Okay, we'll move on. The next application presented is the CU ABLE Community Outreach Program. And if I could just ask, is there somebody here from you're both here from CU ABLE. Could you just explain what the increase is for primarily? Because you've requested $13,802. And for current year funding is 13.8, and the refunding request is for 15,285.
So I think we included some funding for a speaker presenter, which we've had volunteers before come and speak at our events, but we were asked this year to collaborate with a couple of other organizations, and we declined because we didn't have the funding to help bring that person here. So we thought that would be a good thing to put in there. Also, we included a line item for financial assistance for families to be able to who don't have the money to attend something, can maybe we'll get them a gas card or some other way for them to be able to attend either a meeting or an event. And then I think we included office supplies just in the consumables, just because that's something we needed.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, thanks.
Deborah, can I say something quick?
Sure.
I just want to point out, if you move the microphone, move them by the base. Don't lift them by the... That's all right. No, we've all done it. I know what happens.
Okay. The next request is from the Champaign County Down Syndrome Network. The current year funding is $15,000, and the funding request is the same, $15,000. Are there any questions?
Do we have anybody here?
We might.
This application is very similar to previous years, and it's for the same amount. The program is largely unchanged. So I think their activities are pretty well known.
Okay, the next one is, the next request is from Champaign County Head Start, Early Head Start. The program is the Social Emotional Disability Services. The funding is currently at $55,645. The funding request jumps to $73,605. I suspect that, according to Kim's research, that they're initiating a new childhood mental health program within Head Start? Or is there...
That's an application that was made to the Mental Health Board.
Okay.
But that's not charged here.
That's not charged here. Can you tell me, or just, is there somebody...
Well, we have a representative here. I could explain what I think the increase is for, but Brandy could, too. Because I put a little bit of a note in here about it. I might have been wrong.
Good morning. So yes, we did write an application for the Mental Health Board. For the DD Board, we strictly wrote this particular application for support services for the social emotional development specialist that we currently have on staff, who is Elise Belknap. We are continuing to provide social emotional development services for all of our children. But there does, you know, as things have increased, as challenges have increased for us, with the children coming into our program, we're seeing more and more of those social emotional developmental skills need to be addressed as early as possible, even in our infants and toddlers, infant toddler ages. So that is why we have that request. And Lynn, you were right on with your summary.
But the increase here is not to cover any of those activities.
Correct.
It's because of decreased revenue other sources.
That is correct, okay. Yes.
So the activities of this program are unchanged?
That is correct.
Okay.
You did.
Okay, on page 34, the agency is Community Choices. The program is Community Living. Any questions?
Looks like a really good CLC plan. Is that right, Chandra? This one met all of the expectations.
The current year funding is $63,000. The funding request for the coming year is $72,500. Becca, expansion?
It's actually to cover the cost of health insurance, so that's the main increase in funding. Currently, we are not able to offer health insurance to any of our employees, and with the rising cost of the health insurance everywhere, we wanted to make that something that we could offer to employees to sort of maintain a stable workforce and be able to continue to recruit good people. There's also a slight increase in terms of accounting fees, so we switched to a different auditing firm that better met our needs in the last year, and there was an increased cost related to that, as well as I put a line item in there to continue our CQL certification. So there's a small amount, I think about $1,200-$1,300 related to that as well.
Thank you. Okay. The second Community Choices application is for customized employment. The current year funding is $74,103. The funding request is for $87,000. One question, just under the staff questions, under the access section, the question was asked, how many individuals are supported at any given time in this program approximately?
Yeah, so it varies a little bit, sort of depending on the needs of the specific people that we're working with. In general, we have about, for each full-time employment specialist, we have people who are in long-term support who have had their jobs for usually over 90 days, you know, up to about a year and a half. Folks would probably be working with 7 to 8 people who are kind of at that point in their employment. And then they would have 3 to 4 people who are in job development. So those are folks who've been through our discovery process and are actually actively looking for work, applying, making applications, redoing resumes, that sort of thing. And then 1 to 2 people in general who are, they're working with through our discovery process to sort of get ready to for job development. So sort of the creation of that employment plan, that sort of getting to know you process, which takes anywhere from like 3 to 6 weeks, depending on the individual, you know, scheduling, et cetera. So it varies, but that's sort of how we lay it out too.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Is the increase in this program attributable to the same things you mentioned earlier?
Okay. Yes. So, yeah, so
you've moved CQL, insurance, and auditor costs across
yeah,
all programs.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, I think it's a slightly greater amount in this program just because there's more staff involved, and okay, it's a slightly larger program.
How many staff?
So there's 3 people who work in our employment department. I think, let's see, 1, 2... Like 2 of them are funded through this grant.
Okay, then the 3rd application from Community Choices is for the Self-Determination Support Program. The current year funding is $96,000, and there's a request for $116,000.
Do you want me to explain the increase?
I did have a question.
Yeah.
I know we're talking about building in health insurance again for
yes,
this one,
mm-hmm,
and perhaps CQL certification too.
Yes. Sorry.
Oh, and then there's some information on the bottom here about a portion of the program is funded through ICDD for FY19 Q1-3. Mm-hmm. CCDDB funding will allow these projects to continue. If you could
Walk me
through that.
So we have currently, we have a 2-year grant through the Illinois Council on Developmental Disabilities. It's going to end at the end of 3rd quarter next year. The title of the grant is the IN Project. It focuses on creating influence and leadership opportunities for people with developmental disabilities in the broader community. So we're doing that sort of in a 3-pronged approach. So we have self-advocates that we are working with who are acting as mentors for students who with disabilities in the local schools. So we're starting in middle schools. So we started last year through funding actually through you guys. And then we were able to expand that into a larger grant through the Illinois Council. We started in middle school. We're going to have 1 person who's moving on to sort of support that same mentee in their high school. Starting in the fall. We've been having what we're calling community conversations. So this is where we've got a advisory board of self-advocates who've sort of identified some issues that are important to them within the broader community. So we started by focusing on healthcare professionals and creating a better interaction between people with disabilities and their healthcare providers, whether that be a doctor, nurse, dentist, counselor, et cetera, sort of increasing the communication directly between those 2 people. So we've brought healthcare professionals to the table in order to just kind of brainstorm and create sort of a simple guide about what are some suggestions that can create a better interaction there. So that's sort of influence in the broader community. And then there's a media component too, where some of the self-advocates we're working with are creating radio, print, potentially some public TV media projects to sort of help their voices and influence sort of be seen by just the general public. So that is something that grant ends at the end, like I said, at the end of March next year. We'd like to continue that project. So the funding increase is to support those programs through the end of the fiscal year.
Thank you.
So this is one application which identified 2 priority categories, right?
Okay, then we begin with Developmental Services Center with their cultural and linguistic competency activity sheet on page 46.
That also appears to meet expectations. Do you have comments in any of these? You spent a lot of time this year on them.
No.
Okay.
Okay, so beginning, the first application from Developmental Services Center listed in the book is for apartment services. Pardon me, the current year funding is $417,341. The request for the coming year is $429,861. There's just one question I had about the narrative underneath the access section stipulates that every individual served must be eligible for PUNS. But are all the participants on the PUNS list and diagnosed as having a developmental disability? It might have just been ambiguous language, maybe.
Yes. DSC is working closely with RPC, with Mary Rasher, to get everybody assessed, but a majority of the people are on the PUNS list and meet the requirements.
I think the increase is explained, and it's in the program summary, too. Did you see it?
I don't have any questions.
Okay.
This is more a question about future planning rather than this application. There's been a lot about housing shortages nationwide, and I think CU is also experiencing some housing shortages. Are you anticipating, are you thinking towards the future in terms of increasing rents because of significant housing shortages?
DSC's apartment complex.
You own your own?
Yes, the CU Independence is HUD based, income based rents. So, no, the rents would
you
not
don't
be
have to
going
worry about it. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the next DSC program application is for clinical services. Current year funding $174,000. The funding request is, again, $174,000 for the coming year. Okay, on page 56, next DSC application is community employment. The current year funding is $361,370. The new funding request is the same. Underneath the staff comments under program performance measures, I think there are a couple of important questions asked. What is the average length of engagement in this program, and what does the fading plan look like to free up space for new people?
The fading plan from the time the individual is hired in the job, one of the primary focuses is identifying natural supports, whether that be a coworker or a very supportive boss. And, you know, one of the most important factors we believe in somebody being successful is fading our support as quickly as possible so that they don't rely on us, but they rely on their coworkers and their boss. And I'm looking for the second question. What was your second question?
Well, the average length of engagement and then what does the fading plan look like?
Yeah, the average length of engagement, it really depends on the person and on the employer. We have some employers and some individuals and actually some family members who are kind of resistant to us fading our support. And in those cases, what we do, we establish a meeting and we identify a three-month period and ask the person to contact us if they're either the employer or the individual to contact us if there are any issues. And typically at the end of that 3 months, what they realize is, you know, hey, I'm okay on my own. And they also know that if any issues come up in the future, that either we'll work with them informally if it's just a, kind of a short fix, or that they would be considered again for services at that point.
If I could just add one other comment, I think it's a great question because as we continue to serve more and more people that have more challenges and place them in experiences in the community, that give them that opportunity, that is going to become an issue because some are going to need a little bit more support for a longer time. But we're very cognizant that if we don't keep moving those along, based on the principles of getting them the natural support that they need to be successful, that we'll keep backing up and we won't be able to serve everybody. So I think the question's a very good question, but hopefully that our challenge is, as we continue to get people that in the past you wouldn't believe would be employable out there, that it's going to take us a little bit longer, but that we need to do that.
An example of that, if I can just add it, we had a young man, and I think kind of adding to what Dale said, the more we focus on getting people from our in-house programs out in the community, they do need more support. We had a young man who started working at one of the fitness centers cleaning machines. And in addition to having coworkers work with him, he had a timer. So we use, you know, adaptive devices, but he had a timer that helped him identify when it was time to move on to the next machine. But he worked 20 hours per week, and for more than 3 months, the staff person worked with him every single minute he was there. But now he's independent. And we go back and just, you know, do checks. We help him with computer issues or asking for time off. But it is kind of challenging sometimes coming up with accommodations of some kind to help him.
So DSC should have considerable experience working with people in employment in the communities, because I know you have decades worth of experience. I'm curious as to the population, the level of the population that you're serving in community employment. An IQ of 70 is pretty high. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just wondering what the mix is, and are your job coaches getting mixes of people with lesser needs and deeper needs in their caseloads as well?
Yeah, you know, I'll have to get the information to you on IQ levels. You know, I would have to look that up, but I don't want to misspeak. You know, we kind of have a variety of people, you know, who require a variety of support. Mm-hmm. If I can get that information to you.
Okay, I had one other question, too.
Yes.
Do you work with the university at all in getting interns to supplement the supports that you're providing?
We have really had a hard time kind of getting our foot in the door at the university.
Okay.
I know there are a couple DRS providers who have.
Okay.
But that would be great. We do have an internship program now through, you know, as we transition people from in-house programs, one of the first steps in the community employment process is participating in Job Club and working on those soft skills. And then at the end of that 12-week process, we're working with community businesses to provide internship sites.
Okay.
And, you know, that helps with identifying everything from, can the person get to the job on their own and on time, you know, in addition to being able to complete the job without one-on-one support.
So we're actually talking two different types of interns here.
Okay.
I'm thinking of university students.
Oh, university
helping to
students,
supplement,
okay.
The supports that you are providing in the community. And I didn't know if you had any continuing arrangements with the university as a practicum site or an internship site. That's what I'm asking.
Yeah, not to my knowledge.
Okay.
I can say in our children's program we do. We haven't been successful in doing that at the adult level yet. The closest thing we do have is there's a group called Enactus that's working very actively and actually working to get three people their own business that we've been working with for over a two-year period, okay. And that's moving along pretty well.
Okay, great. Thank you.
If I could add to that too, Dale, there is on the clinical level, clinical program directors, I believe some approach and some systematic process to help deal with the incoming requests because we tend to feel a little bit overwhelmed by it. So we're trying to clinically look at, you know, when requests come in, how could they be processed and then sent to the appropriate program.
Okay, the next DSC program is Connections. It's on page 60. The current year funding is $85,000. The request is the same for $85,000 for next year. Questions? Just the staff posed a question about collaboration, about having other artists potentially. Are there other artists who can showcase their artwork here? Are there any grants available through the City of Champaign or perhaps through 40 North to kind of bulk up this opportunity for others?
It's me again. So the function of the Crow at 110, which we really kind of let out of the box with the recent Boneyard Arts Festival. There are two functions of that space, and one right now we're using it for art groups, and we also participated in the Boneyard Arts Festival, and the intent with that was to reach out to the arts community, and it was a great venue. In speaking with the photographers, who also showed their art at that time, we kind of brainstormed about some potential for that space. The primary function, though, is going to be a storefront. We want it to be a gift shop. We really want to be kind of in the forefront of the revitalization of that part of town. The owner of the building is very interested in that and was very supportive of that. Mm-hmm. And we actually showcased some of the stuff that we're going to sell at Ebert Fest, the soaps, and we're going to do bath bombs, and that went over very well. But after speaking with the artist, one of the thoughts is to have different artists be able to display their artwork on the walls, on both sides of the walls, and maybe have art shows on the weekends. And, when the artists were talking about the ability to do that now in Champaign-Urbana, they said that, typically they'll have their art displayed for a week or so, and anything that they sell, 20 to 25% goes to the venue. And so we would look to, again, have kind of a dual function with that space. From that, then what we hope is to have like an advisory council to get some volunteers from the arts community. Just the three women who showed their photography at the Crow, one is interested in exchanging a weekend gallery for providing a photography class for some of the people that we work with, and then also to help them have a gallery to show off their photography. Another woman donated some art and craft supplies, and another one whose portraits were just beautiful was interested in doing portraits for people as well. So, that initial connection was made.
Okay, the next program is Developmental Services Center and Community Choices, Employment First. The current year funding request is for $80,000. The new funding request, again, is $80,000 for a two-year contract, as with two other programs. Questions, comments? Okay, my questions, again, come out of staff comments in the actual summary. They are, number one, how many actual hires can we claim to date? And do businesses actively spread the word about LEAP?
So I like data, so there's kind of a black and white answer, and then there's also kind of the other information that's out there, but I think is hard to measure. So yes, we do get hires directly from the training. We had, this is just from DSC, we had six who were directly hired following training. We did get one volunteer job experience site. We had one person who really isn't ready to explore employment yet, but we were able to get a practice interview for him. We have two potential matches that are being explored right now. One business did not go through LEAP training. For a lot of the big businesses, if they're if they have a corporate office, we've run into several times that corporate does not want them to participate in anything like that. And one business did end up hiring somebody, even though the corporate office would not allow them to go through the training. And then the previous LEAP coordinator, who had a physical disability himself, was actually hired by one of the businesses following training. So we think that's kind of an indirect also. And when we're, you know, I think when we've had conversations, we meet pretty regularly to talk about kind of our direction and what has been the benefit to the community with these LEAP presentations. It is really kind of about that culture change also. Recently, there was an article in the Central Illinois Business Magazine about LEAP, and it encouraged businesses to participate. And I believe there's a follow-up article as well. And then the other thing is, really, when we go into these trainings, we're, you know, we hope that we get a job out of it, but when we're looking for jobs for people, the most important thing is that match, both to benefit the individual job seeker and the business. There are many times that if we make sure we get the right job match on that first person we present, then we have opportunities down the road to present more candidates for employment with that business. And then sometimes, you know, as hard as we try, not every job is successful. And if we, if they have had some really positive experiences in the past, if there's one that doesn't work out, they're still interested in exploring another person down the road. And one of the examples that we have with that, Rockwell Automation, Dick Montgomery, one of our job developers, worked with that business for several years before one person was hired, and they've now hired five people. They were also one of our champion businesses. They were involved in the PowerPoint presentation, and they were also involved when we had recently had the forum for business owners who have gone through the LEAP training to let us know, okay, we're a year into this now, what do you think and what can we do better? So that long-term relationship was developed because we made sure that first job match was something that was very positive. Sorry for the long answer.
No other questions or comments? Okay, the next Developmental Services Center application is for the Family Development Center. Current year funding is $562,280. New funding request is the same. Questions or comments? Okay, moving on. The next DSC application is individual and family supports. The current year funding is $392,649. There's a request for a 3% increase to $404,428. One question. Regarding family choice, can this families use the funds in this through this program to purchase their own services? And how would that look if possible?
I think when I think of individual and family support services, I think of respite, and that's what I spend the largest amount of my time on. A family will contact me, they'll go through our admissions process, and they'll have a provider in mind. It could be a teacher's aide, a family friend, someone who's grown up, you know, next door to them so they know their child or young adult, and that's how we connect with families and have them provide. You know, we then sign them up, hire them, do background checks, and the family controls the schedule. We help them budget their time and spread it out throughout the year, make sure they think about and reserve or hold back time for school vacations. June is a big month. Christmas time is families want to have respite available. But that's how we contract with people who families reach out and provide to us. Providers for respite are really difficult to find. We probably have a half dozen families who are still looking for help. We do have some DSC staff who would take on that second job, but it's a real challenge. At this point, I think our HR department is processing someone today. It's our 37th respite provider. So we have a significant number, but it's not enough. We could use another half dozen at least.
And I'm assuming it really takes quite a while to get through all the background check.
A couple weeks.
Oh, that's all?
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions for Ron about this program? Thank you.
Sure.
Here's where the alphabet failed us. This program was called Integrated and Site-Based Services, so we filed it there, even though now it starts with a C. So I'm apologizing for the order, but to me, it's still ISBS. So.
Okay, this current year funding is $799,090. The new request is for an additional dollar, but for a two-year contract, as with two other programs.
Yeah. This amount is not split across 2 years.
No, yeah. No, it's just a 2-year.
Okay.
Questions? Who should I address this question to? Are you, Annette? Okay. Well, it is kind of is financial. Applying the numbers, you know, The state rate for day services is about 11,000 and change. And as I understand it, there are 53 people funded by the DDB in this program who receive, I would guess, somewhere around $15,000. That's a big difference. So applying, you know, just thinking about it, applying the state rate would free up enough money, just looking at this application, to fund 16 additional people in this program.
I can address that one.
Okay.
Going back when we first, this board was first created in the first funding cycle, and so when we looked at developmental training and now it's integrated type stuff, we did a cost study of what our actual cost per person was at that time when you included transportation and all the different things that are related to it. And at that time, so I'm going back 14 years ago, the cost was $17,550. And so we are supplementing on the state. And how we do that, we're just, on the state one, we're having to supplement with our fundraising dollar, and our fundraising dollar has grown. But I was going to, in fact, in the end, I was going to talk a little bit about financial. Even though many of these programs we're asking dollars for, we're having significant losses. But we are meeting your things, but because of the state rate, we're having significant losses in this program, meaning we have a structural deficit of at least $300,000 at DSC right now. But so you might say, but we're not asking for more dollars in some of those programs because we are meeting and spending your dollars, but we're not overspending. So we are very cautious of the, not the mixing of the dollars and the supplementation type stuff. So to answer your question, we're asking you for the cost of what it really costs us to do the service. And we're supplementing the state side because we can't get that, and we can no longer do that too. So we're in a real bind as far as we can't grow our fundraising dollar quick enough to cover the other side. So that's why one of the struggles we have is sometimes as people move from, and we then, you know, one of the commitments we made to this organization a long time ago is that whenever we get a person state funded, we do that. But the challenge that causes us is that we get a person that you're paying for and you're covering the cost of the, what they need to staff to get them out there, but then they become eligible for state, and so we actually then lose $4,000 or $5,000 each person. So really we have a real strong financial struggle with that. So to answer your question, no, we really couldn't serve more people. By doing that, we would have to get out of the business because we'd just lose that much more money.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Has that had the impact, I mean, whether consciously or not, of not accepting people who have state funding because that adds to the loss? Because there is a, so I think what you're saying is on analogy with healthcare providers make up their losses in Medicaid by charging private insurance more money, but this isn't private. This is public tax dollars, just like Medicaid is. So typically, rates that are much higher using this tax dollar than the state rates are kind of not. It's not really done.
To answer your question, we are at that crossroads. We haven't done that yet. It hasn't caused that yet, Lynn, but it is a real challenge because it's sort of like you say, the more we continue to do that, it's when do we go out of business? So we could look like we're doing okay because when we're serving, if we just did business with you, we would do okay, except we'd have to talk about you can't operate at 100% funding all the time if we didn't have, you know, there should be a margin. We'll talk about that later. There used to be a margin because you can't run at 100% and stay in business either. But the fact is the challenge we have is we need to meet your contract too. So let's say that it's that person that becomes eligible. If we don't then spend your money, it's giving it back too. But one sense, we may have to get to a point that we have to do that because you can only serve so many people that are losing money and continue to do that. So we're not there yet, but that's some of the tough decisions DSC's board will have to make at a point in time because you can't continue to operate at a $300,000 deficit.
But that's what's happened to other providers across the state. They can't increase capacity because it increases the loss. Right.
Absolutely. There's many organizations that don't have local money that have been frozen for a long time. They aren't serving more people at all, and they're just barely hanging on. That's correct.
So the challenge then becomes that Champaign County taxpayers are essentially subsidizing the state.
If we're doing what we promised you to do, we're using your money for your people, and you're paying for that. What we're doing is we're supplementing, having to use every fundraising dollar and other dollar that we have that's not restricted to support that state shortfall. And there's not, even though Jen...
I just want to be really clear about what your logic means, because you laid it out historically, and I think the most straightforward analogy is around how healthcare providers manage by charging different insurance providers different rates.
Yeah.
It's the most similar, right?
Right. The only difference is in healthcare providers, and you're correct, the only difference is in healthcare providers is the flow through that we have, because see, a healthcare provider wouldn't switch a person. Where you have, if a person becomes state eligible, we have to switch them to meet the commitment to you, but it's to a lower rate. And see, a healthcare provider wouldn't be switching somebody to a lower rate. Okay. All right. Well, then, but I understand what you're saying.
I just wanted to make sure I understand this. So we're paying $15,000 and some change per person for the 53 people funded by the DDB who are not Medicaid waivered in this program. You are paying the same amount of money approximately for your Medicaid waiver eligible individuals in that program. The $11,000 is coming from the state, and then you're supplementing. That's where the $300,000 comes from, right? And
both,
or more.
Both our fundraiser and
right, and then so you said even 15 years ago it was costing $17,000 for these services. So you've actually cut the costs from 15 years ago
if our cost study would be the same, our fundraising, we're not making it. It's not covering the cost.
So you said we started at $17,000 plus per person many, many years ago.
Right.
The loss just keeps getting bigger.
Right. Okay. The fact you also had at that time is that when we projected it, we were projecting it on a group of people and then how many more people are coming in. We haven't ran that new cost study now, but it hasn't went down, I'll tell you that.
Well, I also wanted to make a point that with the community first mandate, what we are attempting to do is get more people involved in the community rather than sheltered workshop, and that is done at ratios that are much smaller than in the workshop. So within our day program, ratios can be one staff person to as many as eight people, but out in the community, it's typically 1:3 to 1:5. So the cost of supporting people in the community is higher because those ratios are smaller. And, you know, within my side of the program, which tends to have people who are lower skilled, it can be even 1:2 or 1:1. And so, you know, that is a significant issue also. So it's that balance of ratios of support.
One of the challenges that I spoke with Lynn and we agreed that we'd wait till after this funding cycle because I didn't want to muddy things. And as far as that is, the good news is, folks, I've been talking to you for years. We've been going through, and we finally got the state to move a little bit on. They don't do the whole rate, so it's not helping that insurance, and it's not helping, you know, the gas and all that stuff. But they did do a little bit of something for staff wages last year, and there's some things in there possibly that might happen in the next year or two. What we will have to do is talk about, once this is all done, of how you folks are going to address that, because we got to make sure that if there's new money, that's one thing, but if there's not new money, how we might have to take and actually take some of the money that's currently being spent within contracts to increase those wages also on both sides, because now it's sort of like you can't, if you get an increase on the state side, you still want to make sure that we have to give the same increase to staff on the side that you're funding. And so Lynn and I agreed that we'd have those further discussions and how that'll impact the contracts. I'm not aware, but I just want to make sure that that's not included in our proposal. So when you see none there, we need to redirect some of that money to staff resources, which may affect how many staff you have and how many units you can provide long term. So I just want to let you know that's a big issue, because the good news is that the state's moving, but at the same time as we within our local money need to also make sure that we're increasing that wage across the board.
Significant to this program is the change from August when developmental training became community day services. I'm not sure that the service definitions were changed that much, but isn't transportation now on the table at reauthorization or whenever that unbundling transportation is going to come up again?
It's going to come up again, but it's came up so many times and never done anything about it. I mean, it's came up a dozen times in a dozen years, and it hasn't happened. So it'd be nice, because then you could put a real cost to it, and do that. There's talk about also taking some nursing stuff out and unbundling it too. So thank you.
Okay, page 79, the Developmental Services Center Service Coordination application. The current year funding is $410,838. Funding request is $423,163, a 3% increase. Questions or comments?
I think this is another program that is has probably due to be or has already been impacted by changes that the state made from July, August, and then since, right, regarding the role of the ISC. So this comes in very similar to previous years, and I'm wondering if we should take a look at how those impacts would affect this program description and the costs associated.
I guess I could summarize by saying DHS has kind of turned our world upside down, and it's been really interesting. The rollout was, you know, the webinars a week or so before the system was initiated. We've had really good collaboration with Kate Harmon and her staff at ISC. We've had a number of meetings, a small group of my senior staff and her senior staff meeting to, one, navigate the system because it's changed several times through this year, who's responsible for what. The biggest change I see is in the old days, a year ago, we would have a meeting, discuss the individual, what their hopes and dreams involved, and decide a path forward. Now it's kind of segmented, and there's very positive things to this in that it is, I believe, more person-centered. But ISC has a major role at the beginning of the process, and then we might not even have a meeting. They send the family meets with the ISCs. They send us proposed outcomes. So our collaboration and coordination role has increased because then there's a lot of agency coordination to see if we have the resources to meet the outcomes that the families have requested. And I think the majority of the time, yes, we can, but sometimes they have to be, we have to have discussion back and forth with ISC. ISC has to go back to the family. It's really involved a lot more staff time. But again, I really believe in the process. I think the really cool outcome that was, I guess, unintended, and I'm just, it's just my opinion, is in the old days, we'd have meetings, the ISC would attend, and sometimes after the meeting, the family was like, who is that person sitting in the meeting? And they had no idea. Now they have so much more contact with ISC. And, you know, the conflict-free case management aspect of this is their role. And it just makes me feel better that it's not just DSC staff planning everything. And, well, I think we did a really good job. And we really didn't, you know, try to fit them into what we had to offer. We tried to meet requests. This is just maybe a little bit cleaner process. And it has the ISC as a kind of gatekeeper for the beginning of the process. And it's just, it's been a lot more coordination. And we're getting through the first year. And there's still a chance for more changes in the process. But it's just been a totally different system and a lot more coordination, a lot more meetings with staff inside of DSC to see what we can do. And at the same time, ISCs are getting to know the individuals much more in depth. And therefore, they're having more ideas. So it's just it's a greater flow of ideas between the agencies and families. So I think, you know, it's been a rough year. to get this thing moving, and DHS has, you know, moved the goalposts a few times, several times, but I think it's heading in the right direction.
Just to clarify, in addition to the person-centered planning piece, the ISCs now are also responsible for benefit acquisition.
For Medicaid.
For Medicaid.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we are working on that together. There are some things that are logical for us to do. I mean, and we've kind of worked out a system. We're not there yet, but if we have a person in our group home, we have all of their information, all their banking information. Sometimes it seems silly to collect all that, send it over to ISC so they can fill in a one-page form or something. We've agreed that, and we're still talking about it, that, you know, if we have all the information sitting there, it takes us longer to scan it to them than fill out the form. And look at a bank statement and fill out the form. It's fairly simple. So on individuals where we possess all the information necessary, we are working at taking care of that part of the Medicaid piece, but they still have a major portion. The majority of the Medicaid responsibilities are theirs.
Thanks, Ron.
Do you feel like the description of the program services needs to be updated or might need to be updated during the contract year?
Yeah, I think so. We're still hearing the possibility of some changes, so this could be an evolving process. So it certainly, if I would have written it last June, what we knew then, and now it would be totally scrapped, and we'd started it 3 or 4 times over and over again. And DHS has been supportive, but it just hasn't been real planful in the process, I think I can say safely.
Okay, the next application begins on page 83 for PACE. The cultural and linguistic competency summary is on page 83. The application itself begins on page 85. The program is a new program, consumer control and personal support. The funding request is for $22,800. You have questions for Dylan?
This one,
Jermaine. Okay.
You turn the mic on just in case.
Okay. So this program, just kind of as we summarized, one reason we're able to, I think, provide this program is we've had a program to do personal assistant training through the state of Illinois for about 30 years now, where we provide orientation as well as kind of personal assistant management training to consumers. And we've done that for 30 years. And so what this program is kind of an expansion of that. This past year, we actually had, for the first time, we actually had 3 families of children and young adults with developmental disabilities who came to us looking for personal support workers. And so we looked at the need and said, you know what, we have this experience. We can kind of roll our experience and kind of add to what we do. And so in our orientation and in our database, we've actually made some additions specifically for these services.
I just have one comment, really, or question. I guess reading this app, it sounds like a really good opportunity for families, for individuals. I would be seeking assurances that the personal service worker training, though, will result in assistance to eligible individuals with DD, and also that those individuals reside in Champaign County. And do you have...
Right. So what we definitely will be doing is we are already beginning the process to develop the materials to go out to our partners here to kind of reach out that the service is available. And how we would offer that kind of management services, because we aren't requesting that you guys cover that, we would offer that kind of utilizing other state funds we currently receive, our kind of general purpose grants we receive in the short term before we can kind of piece together the other kind of half of the program. So we would provide it through other grants to eligible consumers.
So I think that we have two existing programs, which would be, that, in my mind at least, absolutely the right places to start. And one is the DSC's Individual and Family Support Program that we already heard about could use some more respite providers. And it's not respite, but it's somewhat similar to respite. It could even be that these people would be respite. So I would think this program should be coordinated from the very beginning with that and the ISC, which is the only unit that can determine true eligibility in this county.
Right. We could definitely help with respite. Part of the idea here, though, is to kind of build that, and it's what we work to do with our personal assistant program. One reason the state kind of contracts with us is because having both providers, so personal assistants, as well as the consumers who have these skills, both to be managers, and then from the personal assistants who learn about things like consumer control and disability awareness and these different facets of kind of being a personal assistant. The idea is that it builds more long-term and beneficial relationships. And so that's kind of what this would be to do, is to kind of help build that tighter link and hopefully kind of build more stable long-term partnerships. But definitely respite could definitely be a piece of that. One of the options we have on our personal assistant registry is, are you willing to be a backup? And that's somebody who, you know, can jump in on a weekend if the kind of regular PA does not show up. Of course, that can be difficult because of hiring and kind of going through the hiring process of the state. And so getting somebody to go through those hoops in the personal assistant side to maybe be called for, 4 hours every other month can be difficult. But we have experience kind of trying to piece that all together.
So do you have a sense, the three families or individuals who came to you already with a request basically for this personal support system, are they on the PUNS list? Are they working with ISC and determined to be eligible?
Yeah, so two of the three are, I know. One of them is a private payer, just because the family didn't go into why they weren't able to be approved, but they said they weren't approved. And so two of the three are, one of those two successfully got somebody from us. The one who's private pay has gotten multiple people from us. But the one who is funded did get one person through us who, the last time we surveyed them, which was in late January, said that they were really happy with the services the person was providing. So.
Any other questions?
I want to make just a comment. We have There's a note in the audit findings here that does not apply to this program. This program hasn't been funded, so the audit comment there isn't specific to that. It's specific to the agency, which, you know, this is just sort of, in past years, we haven't put that much information about audits and about our interactions with the agencies around return of excess revenue. So this year, we were trying to give that information, just showing there is that exchange is happening, and agencies are noting that. So anyway.
Okay, moving on then on page 88, the second application from PACE is for their Opportunities for Independence program, which is an existing program. The current year funding is $40,546. The funding request is for $49,000. Questions, comments?
I just wanted to know, this is for UCP?
No, this is PACE.
Okay, sorry about that.
Okay, my question for this program comes right out of staff notes again. Are the students in this program referred and enrolled in PUNS, and are they coordinating with ISC?
As soon as I was introduced, I have an intake form that's specific to the options for defense. The form is sent over to the ISD and specifically to Mary Rasher, and she lets me know as soon as she's done her intake process. There are several students right now that I do not have an official determination on that I have heard through the teachers that the students I pray that ISC is present in those meetings.
So I might have missed some of what you said, but I want to,
yeah.
Is that okay to repeat?
Yeah.
Or try to repeat? Okay. Yeah. The essence, I think I understood, is that as soon as you're working with a group of students, you let the teachers know about the role of the ISC, and the teachers are referring those children.
That's not wholly correct.
You're giving the teacher information about the ISC? Okay.
I have an intake form that I ask be sent with the students. Well, when I get that intake form back, I forward it on to ISG.
You have an intake form that you use with the students. What is the intake form? Does it involve eligibility through the ISC?
It involves getting the information that I need in order to give that to ISG. I am informed by the teacher that some of are already involved with the ISG and with funds. So that information as well as the knowledge that a representative from ISD attends many of the students I feed. That kind of informs my judgment until I get notifications from ISD that yes, this student is on points or is eligible for point services. If I'm told that the student is not eligible, then I move the student over to one of our general funding services.
I think you've explained that to us in the past, that if you're providing a service to somebody who then it shows to be not eligible, you use other funding to support that, and you don't report them on our on our reports.
And I have taken off a few impacts. I feel that it's important to provide the same services to the whole class. Instead of saying, I don't know what a few instruments. So.
I appreciate that. And I think that is the experience of most of the providers in this room, that helping people is at the forefront, and the highly restrictive terms of the 377 fund are kind of, you know, that's our problem, but I appreciate when people find other ways to support services for those who are not eligible. And I know you've been diligent around that in the past, so thanks.
Thank you, Dylan and Jermaine. Mm-hmm. Okay, moving to the next application, that we have a cultural and linguistic competence activity summary for Rosecrans Central Illinois. on page 92, pardon me, page 92. And their funding request is on page 94. The current year funding is $34,126. The funding request for the next year is $35,150. Comments or questions? Okay, then alphabetically, the last one is from United Cerebral Palsy. Their application, their cultural and linguistic competency activities. I don't know why I can't get that out.
Do you want to make a comment about this plan? This is looks like there are some issues with this plan.
So they hadn't updated their plan and were sent. They sent an email stating that it would be updated. That's because of their board and the way they make their decisions. So it will be updated.
We have already gotten some answers to questions, and I forgot about that one, so thank you for remembering.
Okay, the application is on page 99. The current year funding is $34,590. The request remains the same for the PY19. I just have a question that was posed by staff, which you've probably read already.
So which, the question?
Could you just introduce yourself?
Oh, sure. I'm Jenny Niebergi with United Cerebral Palsy.
Thanks,
Land of
Jenny.
Lincoln.
Okay, is there a fading plan for job support services? And how many people choose the janitorial program? Also, is there a wait time?
No. Okay. There is a program for fading. It's not a formal program. But just like most of the employment programs out here that I've heard talk about it too, the ultimate goal is always to fade away and give the individual the most independence that they can possibly have on the job. So while there is a fading plan, it's more informal and it's always based on the individual's needs. And so yes, we do try to get natural supports, but it really is based on the person's needs. So everyone is different. So, and this year we do not have any janitorial trainees for this year. So they're just going through vocational training, but not janitorial. We just haven't had interest this year. So.
Okay. Thank you. That was all I had.
So I did. From this meeting, I don't think there are maybe two questions that we might still want to pose, but I think this will be probably just whatever board members send to us today, and tomorrow we will forward to agencies for written responses. It's probably just more detail on some of the things we've already talked about. So I don't know.
Okay, that concludes the agency request part of our meeting. So moving on to new business, item C, successes and other agency information.
Felicia Guler from DSC, I wanted to introduce Nicole Sikora. Across the table, sitting next to Dale, Nicole is the incoming director of the Family Development Center. So, welcome, Nicole. And goodbye, DDB.
Goodbye, Illinois.
Goodbye, Illinois. Yeah.
Okay, old business. As always, our meeting schedule is in the back of the packet, page
mistake on it too.
111 to 114. There's a mistake?
Yes.
Okay, let's
it's
hear
a
about
brand
that.
New schedule, and it already has a mistake, and that is that the July meeting, and that's an important meeting because that's when the board seats new members, if there are any new members or reappointed members, and elects its officers. So that will be July 25th instead of July 18th. Big party. That's the only mandated meeting, and I got it wrong. Okay.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for that clarification. On page 115 and 116, we have our extensive list of acronyms. Looking to item 10, CCMHB input, unless Mark has something, some news to share with us, or you do, Lynn?
Can I look at your legislative, the notes from the Ad McManus? So the yes. Mental Health Board will meet this evening for part two of their discussion of program summaries. They needed to break it out into two meetings. I think many of you are involved with that. They are not discussing any DD applications. They will rely on the Developmental Disability Board recommendations for what DD programs to fund on their side. And they have over $600,000 to use for DD programs. So I think our meeting tonight is at 5:30. I don't think that there would be anything of direct value to you all at that meeting, except obviously Rosecrans, because you have some programs under discussion tonight, but not this one. So then they will have a study session in May 18th, I think, or May 16th? May 16th. That's a study session to discuss funding recommendations. So the programs from this set for them to consider funding will be listed in that funding memo. So that will be of interest to some of you. So on May 16th, you might be, I would look at the board packet first to decide if you're interested, but you might be interested in popping in for that. That's a study session. They won't make decisions on their funding allocations until May 23rd, which is the same day that the DD board will be presented with a set of recommendations from staff. And we would probably also put any written information that we receive from you all about these program summaries or applications into that board packet too, as for information to memorialize it. So that's where Mental Health Board is approximately at the same place as the DD board right now. Okay. Ready for my comments?
Sure.
So the next agenda item is my comments, and I just wanted to say that the issue that Deb opened this meeting with, I think is really interesting. We actually have some legislation that stayed on the table this long in the Illinois General Assembly activities. This is an unusual session because it does still have some important DD legislation. One of those is the OIG right to appeal. I would strongly suggest if you do any witness slip filing or contacting of representatives that you support this bill, because this finally opens the OIG process up for appeals. And it, by almost every assessment, the OIG process as it stands has caused some harm by not having an appeals process. So that's important. Other things that are important to me that you might see otherwise are the DSP wage increase. I think the closer you get to that, the more you can see potential complexities on the other side of it. But in spirit, it's great, you know, to keep moving with wage increases whenever we can. There is also, there's a bill about to create six group homes to bring people out of institutions, which people who tend to have high behavior support needs and developmental disabilities really, you know, it's a problem in all of our communities, and I think it is important for the state to keep talking about moving people out of institutions and into community-based care, but then also to care about what community-based care looks like and fund it appropriately. So that might be problematic legislation to you because we know what happens when we move to community-based care, that it tends to be neglected. So that would be support, but also, you know, follow up with some strong advocacy for strengthening the community-based system. 3041 is of interest to us. This is about 377 boards. the 377 statute is especially restrictive in some ways that you're really aware of, and then real loose in other ways. One restriction that doesn't affect us, but indirectly it does, is that townships and municipalities can't establish 377s, and there are some very wealthy townships and municipalities which would like to, because they recognize the failure of the state-funded DD system. So I think for us, it's very good if more communities, if not all, got in the game of presenting more local tax dollars to the DD system. Then it's a little bit less of a problem, that the issue that we were talking about before, like where Champaign County manages to have a slightly more robust DD system because of the extra tax dollars. It would be great if that was more uniform across the state. There are some other things in that bill that might bother you. I'm not bothered by them, but it's easy to research. That's 3041. Then there's dental services for Medicaid. If there was something to figure out how to file a witness slip or talk to a representative about, that's a great one. For lack of dental services, people get very, very sick. So that's, I don't know why we have such poor coverage, but here's an opportunity to push it. And then I think this, I'm not sure that I know enough about this missing DD people bill. This is about, I think in this community, there is a database that the police departments set up in order to find people, and it's not just people with DD, but other disabilities and Alzheimer's. So, you know, we may have a little bit better system already, but this looks like statewide legislation. I don't know very much about it, but there's information. So if you don't have the Ed McManus latest newsletter, that would be it's a very helpful listing, and all of this stuff, I think, you know, could be acted on in the next week. So that was kind of exciting and different. And that's really, most of my comments are around that, but I do have one thing I want to tell you, and that is if you haven't been following the drama of the Ligas hearings, tune in for that, because the federal judge is not being ambiguous about the state of the state, and that the plan the state presented is weak in all the same ways that the state continues to fail the DD community. Rates are at the top of the list. So I think that it's very interesting that twice a federal judge has said in her comments about noncompliance with Ligas that Illinois' Medicaid rates are inadequate. I think that changes the game to some extent, and we'll see. I would like to talk to Barry Taylor at some point about consequences from that. Anyway, And I'm concerned also that the state is already looking at changing the crisis category. And this is sort of what I thought, like the other way to manage the budget is to make a whole bunch of people not eligible for the services anymore. So this is why the work that you have all done over the last year to make sure that people who have county funding are eligible according to the state's rules is really important, because now if those people are only eligible for county funding, at least we know that for this moment in time, that has been established, and then those people can continue to receive services through county funding after the state makes changes, which they're very likely to. So.
If I may, I'd just like to add a couple pieces. One on the 3041, the municipalities and being able to do that. I've been consulting with that group, and there's a couple pieces that was concerned, but to try to get that to happen, and we're pretty optimistic. It got a lot further than they thought that may actually happen, and that's really good. And so there's a lot of pressure, and final things happen. I did want to inform you, though, on a bill that's philosophically the direction I think we all want to go, but has some real concerns with the speed. There's Senate Bill 201. It came up a couple weeks ago, and then it went back. It got killed on the House side by a 14-7 vote, but it's now it's to actually eliminate in the state of Illinois sub-minimum wage. And as you know, DSC's closed down our work operations in McKinley 3, and we're heading that direction. But the concern is the timeline that they're talking about doing that would be like 3.5 years. And there's many places in the state, because of the rates, we all know our ability to get the rates and just the staff-to-client ratio to get people out in the community and to get that many jobs and to get employers ready in that time frame just can't happen. And so there would be a lot of individuals, not just in Champaign, but particularly in rural communities around the state, that would go from at least earning some income to earning none. So I guess what I'm saying is it really puts us in a place, a difficult place. By the way, ARC Illinois hasn't even taken a positive stance on this because of the time frame. Their board was discussing that yesterday, and I don't know where it came. But there's a few groups pushing it, but it's really challenging because many of us want to go that direction to get as many people in the community as we can, but we also want to make sure that people that are earning a wage at this point in time aren't left now just staring at the walls, and that we have opportunities to have a staffing pattern that gets them out doing community activities and or work activities to be able to do that. So it's a real challenge. There's a lot of people that are doing that. So there was hearings on it yesterday, even as late as 5:30 last night. So I don't know what that came up, but I think it's one we need to watch carefully. It's one you don't want to go outward and oppose, but if it's, you know, if you make it too long and you say 10 years, then it'll never happen. But if you go 3 or 4 and you hurt people, that's not good either. So is it 5? Is it 7? What's the right thing? And so I think that's one you need to keep an eye on.
This is not to mention, and we probably should do this in May, coming federal changes, which are going to be a challenge for Illinois. So we'll do that in May or June.
Okay, item 12, we have staff consultant reports in, on pages 117 through 135. They are from Barbara Bresner, who is not here right now, and Chris Wilson. I didn't want to, Chris, if you had any comments about your report or just for informational purposes, it's there for us.
No, I don't really have any comments unless people have questions about it.
Okay. Thank you. All right, board announcements, staff members, or any board members, staff. And finally, number 14, adjournment. All in favor? We don't have to do that even. We can just say we are adjourned. Excellent. We are adjourned.